Good afternoon and welcome. Who's here for the first time? Raise your hand. Well, we welcome you all to Boca Lead. The purpose of Boca Lead is very simple. It's to raise the bar of integrity and character in the business community. And you go, why do we have to raise the bar? Well, I was on a plane from Philadelphia back to Boca with my wife last week, and we're sitting next to a businessman who owns several office buildings along Federal Highway, and he lives up in the Philly area. And I go, I didn't know this at the time, and I go, where are you going? He goes, I'm going to Boca. And I go, what are you doing in Boca? Doing business, I said. And then he just kind of cringed back in his seat and he goes, it's always nerve-wracking when I go to Boca in business. And that was an interesting comment. I said, well, you need to come to Boca Lead and find 350 people that you can do business with, because we are trying to raise that bar. I love Boca Raton. I've lived here my whole life. My parents lived here their whole lives. And my grandparents have lived here their whole lives. We have lived here a long time, almost 100 years, if you aggregate our family. We love Boca Raton, and I believe this is a great place to do business, to raise your families, to worship God, and to be a part of a vibrant community. And that's why Boca Lead exists. So for those of you who are new, we welcome you. One of the things we talk about every year, it's a recurring theme, is the theme of trust. Trust. And today we're going to look at trust. I talked about it last year at length, and so if you were here last year, I'm not going to do the same talk. Although if you weren't here and you want to hear it, it's on the web, you can listen to it. But this is a little different talk, because trust is a huge subject that we can never get enough of. And I believe if you increase your trust, you will increase your influence, that you actually have an ability to increase influence if you increase your trust. Now, there's some papers in the middle of your page if you'd like to take one of those and take notes. Let me begin with an illustration. Last week was the 30th anniversary of the disaster known as Challenger. Many of you were not alive 30 years ago. Many of you were not in this country. But do you remember, those who were in this country, do you remember where you were when you heard the Challenger was, you remember when the disaster occurred and it blew up? I mean, it's one of those seminal moments. I can tell you, I was walking in an elevator, out of an elevator, a man was walking in and said the Challenger went down. It was one of those things. In 72 seconds, that space shuttle was gone. And why was it gone? We all know, if you've ever studied it, from an O-ring, from a little gasket on the solid booster rocket right side aft piece that went down, and it froze up and gelled, and it was too cold, and it fractured, all within a minute and 13 or 12 seconds, and everybody died from it. Now, there was a commission commissioned by President Reagan to look at this disaster, and after they pieced it all together and got everything out of the Atlantic Ocean and saw, they realized it was the O-ring. Well, that's an electrical engineer and a mechanical engineer, all of you, you can discuss that. But the real issue and the conclusion was a lack of trust. It was a people issue that caused that shuttle to go down. And you go, how can that be? Well, if you read that long commission report by the Rogers report, Neil Armstrong was on it, and Chuck Yeager, and all these people were on it. It had to do with communications between people, or should I say lack of communication between people, between Houston, the subcontractors, the contractors, the NASA people, the politicians, and the people on the ground at Cape Canaveral. Well, there were four things that they didn't do that broke the trust. I'm going to tell you them on the positive side. I'll use a positive side to those, but they're the first four things, four traits to trust. I want you to write these down. Number one, the first trait is to behave. Do we have it up here? Behave consistently. Behave consistently. What they found in the whole scenario was that everybody was changing their story. Now, they knew the O-ring was a problem from 1977. This was 1986 when it occurred. 9 years, they know there's a problem. But everybody said it wasn't a problem. It may be a problem. I don't think it's a problem. Yes, it is a problem. And all these, everybody was behaving so inconsistently that they just said, well, let's move ahead. Nobody can come to consensus. And it's worked before, so let's work it again. Well, they didn't realize it was a cold day. It was about 30 degrees. The weather was different than usual. They were taking off in January instead of the usual March and summertime when it's warmer. And of course, we know the O-ring dissolved. But they behaved inconsistently with each other, the various groups, and trust was broken. In fact, they even said in the report there was no trust between the people. The second one is this. They did not communicate clearly. So a trait of trust is communicate clearly. In other words, one guy, I forget his name, at the end said, you know, I told them all that it was going to happen. Well, nobody communicated that clearly throughout the process. And what you find, and what I have found, that most problems in business, and we're talking business, I'm going to move it out of aeronautics into business, most problems in business are not just money problems, and not just I can't find the right, you know, client for this thing or that. What it is people problems. And to communicate clearly is important. The third one was this, to treat your promises seriously. If you want to be a trustworthy person, treat your promises seriously. While we were up on this trip, I was at a funeral of a friend of Elizabeth and mine. It was in Michigan, and we had to fly to Philly to get home. We were sitting at a table at lunch last week, and there was a friend of mine who's a businessman, and some other, it was all business people sitting around a table, and they were talking, totally unrelated to anything, and I didn't have any paper, which is rare for me. I didn't have my I had nothing but a pen. So I grabbed the napkin at lunch. I grabbed the napkin and started writing notes about what the person was telling me because I wanted to write it down and not forget it. It's a great thing to do, by the way. So I said to all of them, I said, well, you know, that's how Walt Disney explained Epcot. And there's a picture of Epcot on a napkin before it was built in the archives up in Epcot. And you can go and he said, and Walt Disney said years ago when he was living, he said, if you can't put it on a napkin, then it's truly unexplainable. So, and that's true, you could see the napkin on the web, and he did it with Disney World as well as Epcot a few years earlier. He did the whole design of Epcot for a friend. I mean, he thought it up here and drew it on a napkin. So I said that to them. I said, you know, if it's good enough for Walt Disney, it's good enough for me, and I'm writing on this napkin. And then the guy, my friend, said, you know, I wrote a contract on a napkin once. Well, the conversation moved on. The next day I was near him, and I said, you got to tell me about the napkin and the contract. He said, I'll tell you this. He said, I sold a piece of property to a guy, and we had a real contract, and he was going to pay me over time, and he stopped paying me. So I brought him in. We had lunch, and at lunch, he promised to pay me back. And so while he was saying that, he said, I opened up the napkin. I wrote it down. This month you're paying X, next month, and at the end, I'm going to pay it in a certain time. And he wrote it all down. He goes, is this what you said? Yes. And then he said, well, what if you don't do this? He goes, I'll give you the property back. So he wrote, I will give you the property back. And at the end of it, he said, is this exactly what you said? Yes. He handed the napkin to him and the pen. He said, would you just sign my napkin? And he signed the napkin. Well, you know the story. Of course, 1 month he paid, the next month he didn't pay, never paid another dollar to him. So my friend called him up and said, you said you'd pay me. And he goes, it doesn't matter. And he handed him the napkin and he said, you promised me right here. He goes, but it's only on a napkin. So my friend took the napkin to his attorney. The attorney filed a lawsuit and took the napkin to the judge. And my friend now owns that property. You see, my friend took his promises seriously. There was no trust, but even a napkin at now you attorneys can tell me if it would happen in Florida, that was Michigan. But the reality is this, is that you need to take your promises seriously. Why? Let me give you, let me digress a minute. I said this last year. If you could pull the slide up from the beginning, Becky, that I didn't go over. Here's the reason in business why. Is because if you have trust, if trust is up, I'm very trusting of you, then costs go down and speed goes up. We can do more work together if we're trusting each other, and it costs less because we don't have to have a pile of people behind us figuring it all out. I trust you. You trust me. We got to write it down to make sure we understand each other, but it goes up. When trust goes down in business, then costs go up and your speed goes down. Steve Covey wrote this. This is not new with me. Steve Covey Jr. Wrote this in a book called The Speed of Trust. You don't need to read the book because this is the whole book. It's 350 pages long. I've given you the synopsis of it right here. So take a photo of it, but it's so serious. If you have a trusting relationship in business, you want to do more business with that person, you trust that person, and all the rest. Now, this is what I want to do for the balance of my time. I want to talk about what it means to be a follower. A follower. And how does that work with trust? Because every leader, every good leader, is also a follower. I have this belief that a good leader is not always the smartest person in the room. And if you are always the smartest person in the room, it's either a very small room or you have hired some very inefficient people. Because these businesses that we run are complex. And if you have to be the best at everything in your business, it is going to be a small business. You need to bring people onto your teams that can do things that maybe you can't do, and you trust them. And there may be times as the leader you are following someone else because they know more about the situation than you do, but you trust them. And if you trust them, that speed of doing things works. So what does it mean to be a follower? There's really two parts, and this is in context of business. You can do it in home, you can do it with relationships, other things, your nonprofit work, but this is business. We're talking about the business scenarios. There's two things that you need. Number one, if we can go to that, building trust is a healthy follower, and I'll come back to being a leader. Follower is how do you think? This is in business. I'm not talking anything else. Now, in your business, how do you think? And there's really two types of people in business. There's those who do think and those who don't think. And you have to realize, this is incredible, many people never think. They can repeat processes, but they never think. And by thinking, I mean be a critical thinker, not a criticizer, not a cynic, but to be able to take complex situations, bring them together, and make decisions. And every business needs that, and you need people surrounding you who have this. So the question is, for you, you can think of it as yourself, or you can think about it as people in your team. Don't just point fingers, because I'm going to describe five different types of followers, and I know what you're going to do. She's that one, he's that one. What I want you to do is first decide who you are, but are you a critical thinker or unthinking when it comes to business? I'm not saying you're a fool and not a thinker, but in business. And the second part, so are you a thinker or not a thinker? And the second part is about action. How do you act? Are you active in your business or are you passive? Another way if I could use is proactive or not proactive, reactive. Are you proactive or are you reactive? So let's look at five types of followers using those two items. Can we do that? So number one, as a follower, this person works in your office, and there may be a few of you here. It's the alienated follower. Alienated follower. What do I mean by that? It's a person who is a good thinker, critical thinker, but is passive in his or her actions. Who is that? That is the one who knows it all. That is the one that tells you everything. That is the gossip. That is the criticizer, the cynic in the group. They're the ones who know everything, but you're not getting a lot of work out of them. They're telling you everything. You know, it's just amazing. I know a lot of these people. They're just everywhere. They know it all, and in some cases, they do know it, but they don't put their action with their knowledge in the workplace. Number two, the conformist. The conformist is the opposite. They're active participants, but unthinking. They're the ones who say, yes, yes. Can we do this? Yes. They don't ever ask why or how, but yes. And they're the type, if you're this type personality, you're maybe one of these pleasers. Want to please everybody, so you say yes to everything without always thinking about it. I can speak very personally about this because I have lived in this category much of my life because I like to please people. Who does not want to be liked? This is the person that wants to be liked. So they always get asked, well, if you are a strong worker, you will crush under that because who do you give work to? People who are already good workers. And if you're not a critical thinker and figuring out what your gifts are, you could crush under it. These people have stress under the water level. You know, above the water level, everybody goes, these are the greatest people in the world. What a cool guy he is or she is, a cool lady. But underneath, they're dying because they're just conforming to somebody else's aspect. Is there anybody here like that? You don't have to raise your hand, but I see those hands. Number three, the passive follower. They neither act nor think. And they don't act, they don't think. They're the sheep. They're the whatever you say is good. Whatever you say, it's good. And if they ever do act, they never take responsibility for their actions. And we see people like that. And there are a lot of people in business, a lot of people in life, a lot of husbands, a lot of wives, a lot of people who are this passive person. Now, having a little passive spirit is good. I'm not against that. But we're adults all in this room. We have to be thinkers. We have to be people who are people of action. These are the people that are just waiting for Friday. These are the people that are waiting for the 15th and the 30th because that's when we get paid. And these are the people that are excited about, you know, everything that doesn't require work, you know, their work product. And yes, they do work or they'd be fired, but they're very passive in this. Now, the fourth one is the one that we should be striving for, which is the effective follower. Effective. You can use other words. If you don't like my words, you can use other words. They are both active and thinking participants. So in other words, they're your true colleagues. They're the ones you want to be having sitting next to you. They're the problem solvers. They are vested in the business. They have a vested interest in the business. Have you ever gone to a business? I love going to businesses and talking to the door person, the janitors, the people that do not require any thinking. They just do what they're told and really see, are they vested in the business? And it is amazing when you see if they're vested at that level, because they can be good thinkers at every level, and they're vested in it. Maybe they don't have to think about making the budget and think about big ticket items and think about the future and think about all your strategies, but you want people, whoever they are, wherever they are, to be thinking because it is the staff that's going to help you save electricity. It is the people, you know, I mean, you talk about saving money, it's people all over. If they are vested, they will think. Now, you want to surround yourself as best as possible with thinkers. There's an African proverb that says, one can go fast, but many can go far. We do for those who are new, we have an initiative called World Lead here. And Boca Lead has come out of World Lead. World Lead is a group of people, about 120 people in 31 countries, that we work with all summer long, kind of from June until October, or a little later even now. And we go to 8 different conferences that we here from this church help 120 nonprofit leaders around the world. We're having one this week here. We do one here in Boca. We have 37 people from 21 countries coming in. I just want to introduce one of them. It's Francois and Karen Vuslu from South Africa. Stand up just for a minute. Francois and Karen, he's a personal friend over the last 5 years. He runs a continent for a nonprofit. This is like, I run a church that has 20 acres. He's in like 15 countries and all over the world. And I say that with such respect because he's now joining us in World Lead. He's going to be one of our teachers and be traveling in other parts of the world with us. He's come a few days early to participate with us. But it's an amazing thing to realize that Africans, Asians, Latins, Europeans, we all have the same issues because these are issues of people. These are not issues of Boca or issues of the United States. It's people issues. And even if you go back, I know a lot of you come from the Jewish heritage. What's interesting from the Jewish heritage, if you grew up, some of you did in it and some didn't, but way back, the nightly prayer was the Shema, Hear, O Lord, our God is one God. And in that prayer, it talks about loving God. Well, Jesus took that as well, and he talked about loving God and loving your neighbor. What was interesting about both of those is they were based on trust. If you read deeply into the Jewish scriptures, and of course you read deeply into the Gospels, love meant trust. And they go hand in hand. We always talk about, I want to love my wife, or I love my work. Well, underneath that word love is trust. See, there has to be some thinking in this. There has to be some action. The action of love underneath it is building trust. Now, there's other things about love as well, support and other things, but trust is huge. Now, the fifth one, and this is one that is in every company. I want you to write this down. And if you are this person, do not raise your hand, okay? This is the pragmatic follower. The pragmatic follower. They can be any one of the four depending on the situation. This is, and I'm not saying this in a negative context to our current political scenario, but they're the politician in, and my people over here aside, they're the politicians in the company. They play games. It's all about them. So when I'm talking to you guys, of course, I'm going to interact with you, and I agree with you, and then I come over here, and there's a dispute between these two teams. Well, I'm on your team now. I'm for you, but I'm for you guys, too, and I'm different, the chameleon, and there are a lot of people who are very smart. They can think. They're very good workers. They can work, but they have no backbone, and if you are to be a trustworthy person, you got to have a backbone. A moral backbone that holds your beliefs, your thinking, your actions in place. If not, you're just like the amoeba or the octopus. It just kind of moves around and grabs his or her tentacles and pulling people in. And nobody likes that person. It not just because they're unlikable, but because they destroy whatever you're trying to build. So my question to you is, which one of these followers are you? And hopefully, you learn thinking and action. This little study that John's talking about, intentional living, is about that. To get us to think properly and to act accordingly within our businesses. Now, let me give you an example as we tie this together. There was a man whose name was Sven Nater. Has anybody heard of Sven Nater? Good. One person in the room has heard of Sven Nater. Sven Nater was an immigrant from Holland in the 1960s. He had lost his family. There were some issues with his family. So while that was occurring, he didn't eat well. both in Holland and in the United States. And so he's a very short young man. But his DNA, and if you know, the Dutch tend to be tall people. In high school, he just shot up to 6'10" from being somewhat, so he never played basketball. You know, it just because he didn't grow up with a basketball in his hand like I did and other people do. So he started playing basketball late in high school and then in community college out in California. And so he was under the radar, but he got better and better. This is in the late 1960s. Well, the best tall basketball player in 1968 was Bill Walton. Bill Walton was the best player then. And he went to UCLA under John Wooden and played there. John Wooden heard of this guy named Sven Nader, and he brought him in. He said, Sven, I want you to be, I don't know how many scholarships, is it 12 or 13? He had one left. He said, I want you to take that scholarship. Sven Nader, he said, here's the deal though. You will never play in the NCAA. You'll never play. You'll never start a game in the NCAA, but you will be on the UCLA Bruins, the best team in the world, but you will never play. But I'm going to give you a free education. You're going to learn to have a great career after basketball. But while you play basketball for us, all you're going to do is practice with a team, and you are going to play with the best team in the world, but you will never play with any other team. Is that unbelievable? Never play in a game. And this is what John Wooden said. Do you trust me? And Sven said, yes, I do. And he came on the team. And for 2 years, he had gone to community college, played little community college ball, got on the UCLA Bruins, and never started a game. Never. But he practiced every single day against Bill Walton. One day at the end of the second season, they won, of course, both national championships those 2 years. So he got the national championship without ever playing. I think he may have played, you know, the 48th minute or something. You know, he got in the game at the end once or twice, but never started a game. They were sitting there one day on the bench at the end of a game, and they're all just resting with their towels around their neck. And Bill Walton, of course, is at the far left because he's in the important seat. And the media came. That was before the big media frenzy. Two or three journalists come up and said to Bill Walton, said, Bill, who is the best center that you have played against this year? And they started ripping off. Was it Syracuse? Was it the Illini people? Was it Stanford? Was it USC? Was it Notre Dame? He said, no, it was Sven Nader. And they looked at him and said, who on earth is Sven Nader? And this is what he said. He said, he's the guy at the end of this bench. Well, never played, started a game. That next year, graduated, got his degree, and the NBA draft came. He was drafted in the first round. The only man in the history of the NBA to be drafted in the first round, never to play. And I mean, years ago, they didn't have the NCAA, but in modern times, not to have played, to start a game in the NCAA, and he was drafted in the first round. Now, in the early 1970s, that's when the ABA was there. You remember Julius Erving, San Antonio Spurs, LA Clippers, they had the ABA and the NBA. So he decides to go to the ABA instead of the NBA. He was the number one rebounder in the ABA. 2 years later, he goes to the NBA and becomes the number one rebounder in the NBA. Only guy in the history of basketball to have won that honor in both the ABA, American Basketball Association, that no longer exists, and the National Basketball Association. Right after that, he quit basketball after a few years like they have to do, and he became a great business executive with Costco. And now he's an executive with Costco, doing great. He's in his early 60s up in Washington State. And there was a report that said this: I trusted John Wooden, and he was right. He followed John Wooden, And then he became the leader in NBA in the 1970s. You have to follow before you lead. Just make sure you're following the right person and that you're doing the right thing in that. Thank you.